Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, I feel like we're finally here. Football season has finally begun. Every team has at least one game under their belt, and the news has just been pouring in over the past few days.
Yeah, it has, and it's honestly sort of difficult to keep up with. You know, this guy's pulled a hamstring, and he's not practicing, but is it really serious, or is it kind of serious? And you know, as I've said many times, I've gotten much closer to the Steeler organization. I'll be up there all day tomorrow. That'll be my last day at camp, but I'll be at all the preseason games and all that stuff. And they have everybody sitting right now. But if they were to play tomorrow, basically all those guys would be playing. So it's a hard line to figure out just how injured are a lot of these guys.
Yeah, it really is tough. There's so many players missing time. And, of course, just late last week we had all kinds of news breaking. Matt, today we are going to answer some listener questions, but before we get to that, I've got to hear your take on some of this news that did break on Friday, and it all really hit the wire at the same time. First, of course, the long-awaited and anticipated suspension for Ezekiel Elliott became official. He got six games, as was the speculation, at least late in the process. He has appealed that, and I don't know. I don't really feel like anybody, like the appeal is going to change anything. It may delay some things as far as the games he actually misses, but I would be surprised if he gets any games back. What are your thoughts on the whole Elliott situation and especially his dynasty value?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we should probably talk about this for a little while because there's a lot of aspects to it. I don't think it kills his dynasty value much. I mean, it's still very, very high. He's in a very good situation. He's an extreme talent. But now you really got to worry about him off the field. I mean, if he does another thing, you know, then it's a year probably. Or, you know, if he already got six, is he in that Martavis Bryant category almost, you know, where you really like him, but you got to be nervous about him? And how immature is he? And is he a bad guy? Or, you know, Dallas has certainly been prone to look the other way. I think it kills the Cowboys this year. And I wasn't high on the Cowboys to begin with this year. But if you look at their first six games, they're difficult. And it wouldn't shock me at all if they're 1-5, 2-4 to start the season. That's a tough road to hoe. I'm curious what you think. You know, it sounds like they'll use McFadden and Morris. I'm not sure I believe that. I think Morris is just such a one-trick pony and such a detriment to the passing game that McFadden's going to be the man. One of my teams that I'm really rebuilding, I have McFadden, and I just threw him out there to see what kind of flies I would attract. Nobody's bit yet, but I wonder what I can get for him at this point. I mean, he's going to start six games probably.
Yeah, he certainly sees an increase in value. I agree with you. It's going to be his show. We don't want to read too much into any of these preseason games, but he did get, I believe he got every snap with the starting offensive line and in their recent preseason game. So that certainly seems like his job for those first six games.
I would think so. He's the better talent and the more versatile guy.
Yeah, so if I have him, if I'm in your position and rebuilding, and I grabbed him off the waiver wire a month ago thinking about this exact situation, I'm probably taking any second rounder I can get. I would consider packaging him with a wide receiver for an upgrade at that spot if you can get younger and maybe even a better prospect or a better player at the wide receiver spot. That would be something to consider. Trading McFadden and a two for a 2018 first would be something I would try.
That'd be a home run. I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, all of those would be home runs. You've got to find the right owner, and that's going to be tough. The obvious target would be the Elliott owner in your league. I don't know. You know, they may be so frustrated with this situation that they are just throwing their hands up and not willing to pay anything for a guy like McFadden who may not have much value after 6 weeks.
Yeah, I own Elliott in one league, one of the hyperactives, and I have no desire to go get McFadden, but my team's pretty good. I mean, he wouldn't even necessarily be a starter for me. And I did forget that the league that I own McFadden, the Elliott owner, and he also owns Alf, offered me Jeremy McNichols for him straight up, and that was an easy no.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider that at all.
Right. No.
So you said you have Elliott in one league. I don't think I have him anywhere. Too many leagues to keep up with, but certainly none of my main leagues. You've got him in one of the hyperactive leagues. Are you considering selling? And if so, what would you be looking for?
I'd still want an awful lot. It hadn't even dawned on me to sell because I think you probably would get 90 cents on the dollar. And for somebody like him on a competitive team that I plan on winning it this year, I'm not taking 90 cents on the dollar. I mean, even if it costs me six games of starting somebody who's not quite as good, I think he's very much a hold.
If you're doing dynasty rankings, assuming he was somewhere between 1 and 3 before this news, does he drop out of the top 3 at all?
I don't think so.
So does he drop below?
Because I don't know who 4 is. Right. There's not a 4 that's jumping off the page for me. I mean, if it's week 2 and Leonard Fournette's run for 350 yards, maybe I might change my tune. Or if Gurley looks like Gurley, but like Devontae Freeman to me, I'd rather have Elliott.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's probably helping Elliott maintain some of his value or stay inside that top 3 is that second tier, it's so deep. And while everyone has their personal favorites, maybe Gordon or Freeman or Jay Ajayi or one of the rookies or still holding out for Gurley as an elite player.
Or Howard.
Howard. There's just so many of those guys. So if you drop him below one of them, you almost have to drop him towards the bottom of the top 10 to the end of that tier. And that certainly doesn't make sense.
No, I mean, he's only played 1 year in the league. I mean, he came out as a junior. He's on a great team he's proven. I just think 6 games is not much to worry about when you think about his whole career, assuming he doesn't do something else stupid.
And I think that's what dynasty owners have to consider. If I could somehow know that he's going to miss these 6 games and then he comes back and he's a Boy Scout from then on, then I don't think his value, dynasty value, really changes at all. It's this concern for the long term that if he does mess up one more time, what happens then? The league, if I'm not mistaken, said something along used the term banishment. Which is a little scary for
that's a bad word.
Yeah, that's scary for Cowboy fans and for dynasty owners. So that's more, in my opinion, what's affecting his value or what could affect his long term value. Not just these 6 games, but does he mess up again? Does he make another one of these bad choices? And it's not just it's not just one thing. Like we look at Martavis, and he just couldn't stop.
He has one
problem. He had this marijuana addiction, but with Elliott, it's a bar fight, and it's obviously the domestic issue with his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend and the St. Paddy's Day thing. And I mean, it's several different things that have kind of piled up. We don't know what could be next. It could be a repeat of any of those issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sounds like overall immaturity, but I mean, we know that the NFL doesn't screw around, nor should they, when it comes to putting your hands on a woman, and I mean, I guess we could get good news within the next week that he states his case and they lessen things I don't think it's kind of what you alluded to before. I don't think it's crazy talk to think that he can postpone this, that he doesn't get suspended this year. We've seen some people do that, just kind of do the paperwork and push things ahead. And I guess Elliott owners would like that and worry about it later. But it doesn't seem like he's very contrite either.
Well, this process has already taken, I think I heard it stated that it was over a year. I'm not even sure of the exact date of some of these things, but it feels like the rumors and the reports have been out there for close to a year, if not. So I wouldn't think the NFL would want to stretch this out much further if he has appealed, obviously. I think they're going to move as quickly as they can with that. Do you think the best case is that it gets knocked down to 4 games?
Yes. Although when the news came out, I thought that was high. I thought we were going to get 1 or 2. But I know that I don't know all the details, too.
Right. Well, that wasn't the only news on Friday. Soon after the Elliott suspension was announced, the Buffalo Bills made a pair of really surprising moves, trades that no one saw coming. Really, we never see any trade coming in the NFL because they're so rare. But these were both shockers. First, they deal their top wide receiver, Sammy Watkins, to the Los Angeles Rams, essentially for a second round pick. I know Sammy is one of your guys, Matt. I saw Evan Silva, our buddy over at Roto World, say this was the worst possible landing spot for him. What are your thoughts on that?
I disagree. And I've kind of been saying it a little bit on the show and all off season that I have some hope for the Rams offense. And most of it is centered around McVay. But I also think that just look at from the second they fired Fisher, including that move, everything that the Rams have done is to make Goff's life easier. You know, that get rid of Fisher, bring in McVay. That's a big change in the positive direction for a young quarterback. Then you go sign Whitworth and firm up, you know, the worst position and most important position on the line. Then you go get Woods, who at least can move the chains and is reliable. They've had very little reliability at the wide receiver position. And then you use the draft and, you know, you get a tight end and you get Cooper Kupp and you get Reynolds. So they've really ignored the defense and just said, we're going to do everything to make your life easier, Jared. And yes, it's on you and you were terrible last year, but we liked you. Somebody liked you enough to make you the first overall pick not too long ago. I don't think Goff should have been in the games last year. He clearly looked overrun and overmatched. That I think McVay can at least get him to a near Kirk Cousins level. I think it also is going to benefit Gurley a great deal. I think this offense is not going to be terrible. And they like to go deep. I think, you know, I'm not saying Watkins is Deshaun Jackson, but he's going to get a lot of shots deep, a lot of play action. There's talent here now. I mean, they haven't had number one receiver forever. That is a leap of faith on Goff. And I know how bad he was last year, but it's more of a leap of faith on McVay. And I also trust Gurley.
I think I kind of agree with you. I'm liking this pass-catching core more and more. Obviously, the addition of Watkins goes a long way for that. But I describe this team as this wide receiver group and tight ends included as kind of a best ball group. You know, you play an MFL 10 and you don't know from week to week who's going to be your top scorer and which guy is going to step up. This kind of feels like that. Outside of Watkins, you've got Woods and Kupp and Reynolds and Pharaoh Cooper and the two young tight ends. And on their own, I don't really love any of those guys necessarily. But as a group of five or six or seven young players, two of those guys are going to step up on a weekly basis. And I wouldn't go as far as to say the offense is going to be imposing by any means, but I think it's certainly going to be much better than it's being given credit for right now. So I guess I'm somewhere in between Evan's feeling and agreeing with you, but I don't think it's worst case for Sammy.
No, I don't think it's a fantasy wasteland or like going to the Jets or, and in a way I agree with you about the best ball mentality, you know, way of looking at that offense. But I agree with you more before the trade. I think this defines things pretty well. This is a sort of a Shanahan-based offense, and they've always wanted a number one receiver. They want a Julio. They want a Marshall. They want an Andre Johnson. I think Watkins very much is that guy. And now Woods is clearly your two, which is exactly what he was when they were together in Buffalo and exactly what he should be. I think Kupp is now pretty clearly your move-the-chains Jamison Crowder guy. And I think you're going to see – a lot of double tight end sets like you did in Washington and hope that Everett or Higbee becomes some sort of semblance of a Jordan Reed. And I think Tavon Austin sits the bench.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here listening to you and kind of jotting down some names of these players. And Tavon Austin was the one I forgot. His name didn't even come to mind. And in fact, since this trade with Watkins, there's been at least some rumors and reports that he could be traded. I don't know that anyone is trading for that crazy contract they gave him.
Right.
So they would have to.
But he's not in their long-term plans is the bottom line.
No.
They may even cut him.
I don't know the cap implications of that either, but yeah, it just goes right. to show how bad of a move that was last year.
Last note on the Rams, though. I mean, all those guys, not including Austin, but the guys I mentioned that I think are going to be prominent members, two tight ends, three receivers, Gurley, Goff. Woods is the oldest of them all, and I think he's only 25.
I'm surprised Cooper Kupp's not the oldest. He's pretty old.
He is pretty old. I don't think he's 25 yet, though.
All right. Last thing on Sammy. I guess the popular opinion is he loses some dynasty value as a result of this trade. Do you see it that way? Does he maintain kind of that wide receiver 10 to 12, 10 to 15 range for you?
He maintains for me. I mean, I don't think any of us thought he was going to be back to Buffalo next year. And I guess he could have hit the free agent market and ended up with Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers or some phenomenal spot. But I didn't love his fit in Buffalo. I think Buffalo is sort of a dysfunctional group right now, especially for the short term. I mean, their whole goal is just to accumulate draft picks and live for tomorrow. And what's interesting about the Bills, too, is Zay Jones, Anquan Boldin, and Jordan Matthews. They're all like slot, slow, move the chains guys. I know Zay Jones ran well, but that's not how he plays. I mean, that is not a Tyrod Taylor group of receivers at all. It looks like a Nathan Peterman type of group of receivers.
It really does. And it doesn't feel like Tyrod has a place on this team. I don't expect them to do anything before the start of the season, especially after they worked out their differences early in the offseason and not handing the keys over to Peterman. But Tyrod, Charles Clay, maybe even Shady McCoy feel like players that are going to be on new teams in 2018.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, the Bills now have two firsts, two seconds, two thirds, and they're not going Browns or Jets mode, but they're not much different. I mean, where it's all about the future. You got a GM and a coach that are very safe. They're new. They want to get out the old, and they want to build everything in their image. And I don't think Taylor's in the mix at all. And I don't think he's going to end up on another team in 2017. But if I was Denver, I'd call them. Or Jacksonville.
I guess my question is, what took so long? You hired the new coach 3-4, I don't know, months ago. And you bring in this new regime. And then you wait until a month before the season to trade two of your best players.
I mean, maybe just didn't have two to tango. And also, wouldn't it have been easier to trade him if you would have picked up his fifth-year option too? Like, that never made sense to me. It's like, why not just pick it up? Because it's still cheap. And you could trade him then, or, you know, even if you don't love the player – he's clearly a good enough player to pick up the fifth-year option. It wasn't like Jarvis Jones or something. I mean, I don't know. The whole situation hasn't been handled well. But I think their intentions now are very clear, where they're punting this year and they're going to bring in their own guys. And they already, you know, and the other note is they already traded Cardale Jones, who is a big, strong-arm, downfield passer. I wonder if they want, you know, a move-the-chains, precision, Chad Pennington type.
Well, and soon after they make these trades, they promote the rookie Nathan Peterman to the second string mm-hmm. job. So give me an over-under on how many starts Peterman gets in 2017. Does he get three?
Yeah, because I think the Bills are going to be so bad, they'll be 2-10 with intentions of moving on from Taylor. So now you say,
what do we have? You
know, yeah, let's at least look at him. Or Taylor could get hurt, of course.
Sure. So we've already kind of mentioned the last big piece of news from last Friday. It was the Elliott suspension, the Sammy Watkins trade. The Bills followed that up by acquiring Jordan Matthews from the Eagles. There had been a lot of talk there about Nelson Aguilar overtaking him for the slot role and basically Matthews losing snaps, losing playing time in general. From the Eagles' perspective, this is not necessarily a huge surprise, and the Bills needed some help after moving Sammy. So taking a shot on a player like Matthews, who has been productive in the league, makes some sense.
It does, except he's a free agent after the year. You know, he's never going to get franchised. I mean, I guess you can audition him for a year and maybe you sign him before he hits the open market. But I thought that was a little odd, too, that you would bring in a guy whose contract's expiring just to rent for a year.
Well, I think the appeal of that trade was the draft pick, basically, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to me, in just NFL standards, the Eagles are the team that won the most in this because, you know, Darby was a really good young man coverage corner, especially under Rex Ryan. And, you know, they're going to install a Panthers like defense that plays a lot of zone, doesn't ask a lot of their corners. So Philly's sitting there going, boy, we have a pretty good team. We have an extra receiver. Corner is by far our weakest area, and we can get a guy that's got 2 years left on his rookie deal. Yeah, take the third.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. They clearly needed some help in the secondary, and they get it from the Bills, who are just ready to lose all the games in 2017. Matt,
meanwhile, everyone around here that hates the Patriots and are Patriot jealous are just looking at it like, are you kidding? I mean, could they have an easier run through the AFC East now?
I did see several people on Twitter question the discussion of, would the Patriots win more games than the rest of the AFC East combined? And you have to think there's a pretty good chance. How
Miami might win 8, maybe.
Yeah, what week do the Patriots clinch their division?
One thing I've been saying is I would absolutely put a chip down on the Patriots winning their division if Tom Brady never took a snap.
Yeah.
That'd be the massive favorite.
Oh, they'd still be the favorites.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not really going on a limb there.
All right, let's get to some of our listener questions. These submitted through Twitter, and as always, we got some good ones. First one from 48-year rebuild, and it looks like he's a Jets fan, so we know what that's in reference to. Yeah, he's not asking about the Jets, fortunately, though. He wants to know more about Jarvis Landry, wants to know our thoughts on where maybe he lands, where he ends up, if not in Miami, and what can we expect out of him, out of his career, both as a player and a fantasy option. I've been really surprised there's this much talk about Landry not getting a deal with the Dolphins this offseason. There's several players in that class of 2014, wide receivers especially, and outside of the first rounders who got their option picked up, like Odell Beckham and some of these other guys, most of them, and unless I'm mistaken, most of them have not agreed to a new deal. So I just don't know why there's so much of a focus on Landry and the Dolphins. What do you think about that situation, Matt?
Yeah, I feel pretty strong on this one in that, and it really started to spring up whenever they gave Stills big money, you know, because they're very different types of receivers. And the indication is, you know, if you're going to give Stills that kind of money, then what's Landry deserve? A lot more. But I don't think Landry's in their long-term plans, and I think he's less in their short-term plans with Cutler behind center than he would have been with Tannehill. And I think they want to be a Stills and Parker type of downfield, bigger-bodied, taller guys than Landry. I mean, they inherited Landry. Gase has had a lot of success with guys like Alshon Jeffrey. I think that's more the what they want out of the position, and they don't want to say, hey, we're not interested in resigning you because he's still on the team. I just don't think they're all that interested in resigning him. And for all those reasons, I think he's a big dynasty sell right now.
Do you feel like, I mean, and Landry's had a ton of success. He's one of the most underrated players, maybe in dynasty overall, not just at the wide receiver position. He's, if I'm not mistaken, he's tied with Odell Beckham for the most receptions through the first 3 years of their career. So he's no slouch here. Is he the type, no. Is he the type of player that if they let him walk, he goes to any other team? We won't try to project that, but he's not the kind of player who's not going to have success elsewhere. Right. I mean,
I'm not as sold on that as you are. I don't think, I mean, I think he's a little bit better fantasy, especially PPR guy, than he is real life difference maker at the NFL level. He catches a lot of passes, but they're all the same. He isn't a real diverse player. I mean, but if he'd go to the Patriots, he'd catch a million passes and he'd be a first round pick. You know, I mean,
sure.
You know, but he'd have to go to a spot where they really have success using a slot receiver. I mean, if they ask him to line up out wide, I don't think he'd be successful. He's just not very fast. I mean, he's a physical guy. You'd love him on your team. My son would have his jersey if he was here, you know, but he's just not very fast and doesn't get separation.
Yeah, I can understand that. I guess I'm just not scared. If I'm a Landry owner in Dynasty, I'm not scared about him leaving Miami or not getting to catch passes from Ryan Tannehill. Those aren't things in general that worry me. I feel like there's a dozen spots, maybe more, where he could go and have a better quarterback, a better offense in general. And I guess I'm just not worried about him leaving Miami at all.
Yeah, I guess those are good points, especially now. I mean, the Miami quarterback situation's in more upheaval than ever. I mean, maybe Tannehill's not even a starter next year. Maybe it's Teddy Bridgewater or Kirk Cousins or a first-round pick or who knows. I mean, I hear you. I mean, you could certainly see his next destination being a favorable one.
Right.
I mean, I don't think he's – I don't. You're right. I mean, the more I think about it, he's never going to fall off a cliff. He's always going to catch a lot of passes. He just isn't on any of my teams. I'm not targeting him. He won't be on my redraft teams for sure though this year.
In Dynasty, do you want Jarvis Landry or Devontae Parker?
Parker.
Okay. All right. Next question comes from Martin. It is a trade question. 12-team PPR league. He's going to give Kirk Cousins, Hunter Henry, Devontae Parker, who we just mentioned, and a 2018 first rounder. So Cousins, Hunter Henry, Parker, and a first. He's getting Gronk and Aaron Rodgers. So you can think about this as Cousins and Henry upgrading both of those spots to Rodgers and Gronk at the cost of Parker and a first rounder.
I mean, in a vacuum, Gronk and Rodgers. I mean, you're getting for the world of redraft, you're getting the number one quarterback, the number one tight end for the number 15 quarterback and the number 12 tight end. And people know I like Parker a lot, and I certainly like first round picks a lot, but it's clearly, if you're a contender, you want the Gronk side.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty easy deal to make.
Yeah.
Presuming Martin is a contender. Like you said, I don't think he would even ask the question if he wasn't, although even if I'm not a contender, that's a tough deal to turn down. You get Rodgers and Gronk, and even if you're selling them week six, you feel like you could probably make a profit on that.
That was going to be my question to you was, let's say, you know, Beats by Gray is in a productive struggle mode, and I offered you Gronk and AR for those four assets. Do you still take it?
I think I probably would. My only hesitation would actually be the first rounder.
Right.
If that looks like a top three pick, it's tough to turn that down. We do this. We as Dynasty players do this every year. Look forward to the next class. We talked for the past year about the class of 2017 and hyping that up and how excited we were. We'll probably do it again with 2018 with Saquon Barkley, Darius Geis, Cortland Sutton, and so many more guys. So collecting first is always a good idea, especially if they have a chance to be high picks. But yeah, I think in most cases, I want the Rodgers and Gronk side of that deal.
Because let's say I subtracted that first round pick out of the deal and I put the name Geis in there. Now it's a lot harder to say yes.
Oh yeah, for sure. Now you're thinking I've got a solid starting quarterback, one of the young tight ends that everybody in Dynasty leagues want. You've got
Landry might leave Miami and Parker becomes the number one.
Yeah, it certainly does.
And guys,
make it tougher for sure.
Let me tell people about our buddies at Loot Crate before we get any further though. They've been back us for a long time. We have a real great personal relationship with them. Their product is outstanding. So we are big fans of them, and apparently they're big fans of us, which we very much appreciate. But let me tell you a little bit about them. Be the envy of your friends and get 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/dynastyblueprint. Enter our code dynastyblueprint and you'll save a couple bucks off an already cheap subscription. August Loot Crate theme is Kingdom. I'll tell you about that a little bit more. If you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. It's the best surprise you know is coming every month. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than 20 bucks a month and even cheaper when you use our codes. If you're more of a fanatical fashionada, then try Lootware. Monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. If you're going to get fancy, we'll get a bigger box with even bigger loot in it with Loot Crate DX. Or if you want to geek out your pet, that's awesome. Try Loot Pets. The offer expires at July 19th at 9 o'clock Pacific. But don't worry. After that, they will have a new theme that'll be just as good, if not better. So check that out. But this theme until the 19th is Kingdom. And the August Loot Crate, you'll find items from Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time, The Lord of the Rings. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. So you have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate. And when that cutoff happens, then it's over. But there will be a great one coming up after that. So go to lootcrate.com/dynastyblueprint. Enter our code dynastyblueprint to save a few bucks off an already cheap subscription today.
Matt, our next question comes from the Fantasy Freshman. He says, which back do we want out of the New York Giants running backs? And then he mentions Paul Perkins, Wayne Gallman, and Orleans Darkwa. I think it's interesting because my answer is probably option D, Shane Vereen.
I went Vereen much more than Darkwa.
Yeah, I just don't want I don't believe in the talent of Perkins or Gallman, and certainly don't really even think Darkwa is worth a roster spot or really even worth discussing. But Vereen is the one discounting Darkwa between Perkins, Gallman, and Vereen. He's the cheapest. He's looks bound to be the PPR back in that offense. And I think he's the most talented of the three.
And they are going to throw a lot. They live out of three receiver sets. Engram's almost going to be a fourth receiver. You can see Vereen being a big part of the offense. And, you know, he's just kind of out of sight, out of mind. For what he costs, which is next to nothing, I agree with you, particularly in PPR leagues. I probably like Perkins a little more than you do, just because I think opportunities there. He can take a step forward. But I bet in the end, him or Gallman are not going to end up on my fantasy teams. There was one rookie draft where I thought Gallman was surprisingly cheap as a late third rounder, and I jumped on him. But looking at it, like, maybe he'll be the plunge guy. Maybe, you know, Perkins just isn't very good and just gets out of the way.
Yeah, he feels like a guy like maybe Wendell Smallwood last year. You take in the third or fourth and hope he hits, and if he doesn't, you move on.
Yeah. Or he has two good weeks in the trade.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best right. The best strategy for sure. We got a couple of questions on Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, with a focus on Coleman and his value now that Devontae Freeman has his brand new big contract. I think he's the highest paid running back in the NFL with that contract. What does that mean for Tevin Coleman?
I didn't like it because I was starting to kind of buy up Coleman. Not that I thought Freeman was going to leave, but I didn't enter Coleman's career as a believer in him, but I really liked how he was used, and maybe Shanahan had a lot to do with that. He was a better receiver than I thought. He's better in space than I thought. But I also look at Atlanta's offense and think, man, last year almost has to be the high watermark, that some of these guys have to come back to earth a little bit. And probably him as much as any, although I like the player.
What do you think they do a year down the road when Coleman is in this position? Are they going to give him a new deal as well? Are they going to go the old Carolina Panthers route and lock up both of those running backs and just frustrate fantasy owners? Or does Coleman somehow get out of town?
I think Coleman gets out of town, or – you know, Freeman, unless, you know, if Freeman's injured a lot between now and then, and he's actually nursing a concussion as we speak, he's not going to play this week. Maybe they move on from the big contract at that point. Nobody keeps two backs that cost a lot of money. It's bad business. I don't think that's a, potential situation.
Yeah, we talked about the Dallas Cowboys regressing both from an overall record standpoint and potentially their offense as well. Obviously, Zeke is bound for lesser values and much lower numbers, of course, in his limited season. But I think we kind of expect Dak Prescott to drop, but the Falcons are the other team who everyone is just presuming will not be able to match that production and the fantasy points they put up a year ago, with Freeman having a huge year, Matt Ryan having a career year, Tevin Coleman scoring, I think he scored 9 touchdowns, I believe. That's, you know, those numbers seem bound to drop. So both of those players, both of those backs have maintained their value or even increased their value this offseason, but I'm not sure that can be sustained once the regular season begins.
The other thing I always talk about with Atlanta's offense was all 5 of their offensive line starters played 16 games and basically missed 0 snaps last year. That's not going to happen again. And Chris Chester, who is their worst starter, retired, and depth is really poor there. So I bet the blocking will be lesser.
Matt, the other big story of the weekend that we haven't mentioned yet is the Lions rookie, Kenny Golladay, just put on a show in their preseason game against the Indianapolis Colts. That was the Sunday afternoon game, the only game on at that time. And if you were watching a game, that was the one. And so he's flying up draft boards. I've seen him already being drafted in the late first round of rookie drafts after just a few weeks ago, if a couple months ago, being a third, fourth round flyer. So what are your thoughts in general on Golladay and his role in the Lions offense, as well as what you're doing with him in dynasty leagues?
I wasn't enthralled with him coming out. You know, I mean, I see a big, fast, athletic guy, but I didn't think he was a great prospect. Apparently, I mean, I might be wrong. There's no doubt. And they aren't a very vertically, and you know, they don't throw deep a lot. It's usually get it out of Stafford's hands quick. But I think that, I don't know, with the Lions, I think that they treat Stafford as a quote game manager, not because that's what's best for him, but because they can't run the ball and their defense stinks. So they play slow that way. And I think ideally they know that Stafford's capable of more, taking more shots, pushing the ball down the field. Maybe an enhanced offensive line helps that, but the defense still stinks. So I'm curious how they play, but I can see him seeing the field quite a bit. I mean, he's got to be out. He's probably their third receiver now, right?
Yeah, he seems locked into that third receiver role. Of course, that was filled by Anquan Boldin last year, who ended up being a big red zone threat as Marvin Jones kind of faded down the stretch. They did not even put up a fight trying to hang on to Boldin. Of course, he sat on the street for a while before the Bills recently signed him. Eric Ebron had some injury issues last year. He's already had some injury issues through training camp. So I guess the thought is that Golladay not only has that third down role locked up, but he might be the primary red zone target as well in that offense. So that's what has fantasy owners, dynasty owners hot after Golladay and has him moving up the board. I've seen him, I mentioned going in the first round of current rookie drafts, but I've also seen him traded for future first round rookie draft picks, which that's a pretty nice investment. If you draft him in May or June in the third round and you can sell him in August for a first rounder, you've got to feel pretty good about that.
Oh, I'd do that in a heartbeat. I would much rather have a future first than Golladay.
Yeah, I like Golladay. I was obviously, like everyone else, impressed with what we saw on Sunday. And it's not just a one-time thing. It's been the steady beat, as Sigmund Bloom says, of positive news with Golladay through camp, both rookie camp and training camp now. So I do think he's for real. I don't think he's the next Tajay Sharp. I saw a lot of those comparisons, but at the same time, I don't know. I don't consider him a fantasy starter. He's not a guy we can rely on at this point, based on what we know. He could obviously turn into that, but I'm not ready to assume that yet. Matt, we got a couple of questions on how to value Golladay in comparison to other rookie wide receivers. The first one specifically, Zay Jones. So we've talked about Jones on here a lot. I think his value is on the way up with Watkins out and now Jordan Matthews hurt. So Zay Jones versus Golladay, who do you want?
I guess Golladay. Everyone has Jones ranked ahead of him in the rookie drafts. And everyone's probably looking at Jones like, oh, he's going to be their number one. I just don't think he's the number one. The Golladay buzz is really, really strong. The performance was really, really good. But I'm not a – I don't love either.
I don't think I love either as well. I'd probably take Jones. I just probably based on the opportunity and the volume he has a chance to see. I think both right now are nice dynasty sells. I think you can get a decent profit from what you acquired them for a few weeks ago or a couple months ago. So both players are guys I would consider shopping if I had them. The other one was Golladay versus Juju Smith-Schuster. I know we're both Juju fans. You've gotten to see him plenty up there in Pittsburgh. Juju versus Golladay.
Well, I got to come clean, and people can find it on our older podcast, but I had Juju noticeably down my rookie ranks compared to you early in the process, but I am warming up to him, being around him a lot. There's a lot of talk that he could either challenge Eli Rogers for the slot position or be an outside guy, and AB goes to the slot at times. The buzz is really strong about him. They like him a lot. He suffered a concussion in the first week, very, very early in the game, or he would have played a lot more snaps. I bet he doesn't play this week. But still, there's a lot blocking him. You know, I'm not done with Coates. Eli Rogers is going to be tough to get off the field. I guess I take Juju, but I don't own any of his. I don't own any stock in him right now either.
Yeah, I'd still take Juju as well. It makes me feel good that you're seeing and hearing some positive buzz on him. I actually think it's been pretty quiet on him as far as like a national news basis. There hasn't been the hype on him, and that's probably because It's the talk up there. The talk out of Pittsburgh is all Bryant or Bell.
Well, one thing that's really helped him is Brown's been sidelined. Bryant was suspended. Coates has been sidelined. So he's been running with the ones.
Right. So even if we can't count on Juju this year, which it kind of sounds like that's maybe what you're projecting, I'm still taking him long term. But that's not a knock on Golladay. I like Golladay, and if I drafted him in the third round, which I didn't, I wish I did, but yeah. I'd be doing backflips right now. All right, next.
Yeah.
Next.
But this might be the best his stock ever goes.
Yeah, well, I tweeted this out on Sunday during that game, and I basically said there's a 5 to 10% chance this may be the highest his dynasty value ever gets, this 1 week of the preseason right now. And got some good feedback on that with a few people saying, it's more like 25 or 30%. So maybe I was giving him too much credit. Next question, in a start one quarterback league where I own Andrew Luck, should I trade Randall Cobb for Matt Ryan? And he also mentions that Cutler, Flacco, and Alex Smith are on the waiver wire. So for his specific question, I'm keeping Cobb over Matt Ryan. I'm just going to grab Cutler or one of those other guys off the waiver wire and play it out until Luck gets back. But Matt's what I want to ask you is specific to Andrew Luck. What are you hearing, or what have you seen with his injury, and how worried are you if you own Luck in Dynasty?
I don't know, because I don't trust any information we're getting, because I think their owner's bonkers.
Bonkers.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say he's bonkers. So everything's going to have to filter through him in terms of what you let out. Sometimes you hear, boy, it looks good for Luck to be there in the first week. And then, ooh, it doesn't look so good. And if he does go out there, is he going to be playing injured all year? And he certainly takes a lot of hits to begin with. a lot of them are on him, not the offensive line. He holds the ball a long time, deep drops. So is he always going to be injured? I mean, I really hope not, because I love him as a prospect player, what he can be. But yeah, I'm worried. And every day I get a little more worried if I own him. But back to the question, I think, Matt, I mean, you have to agree, though, even with your Randall Cobb love, that Matt Ryan is worth more than Randall Cobb in a vacuum.
I don't know that I don't know that I would, and I'm trying to remove trying to remove the Randall Cobb love, but quarterbacks, you know this, Matt. Quarterbacks are just so cheap to acquire. Like, why would I pay? Why would I give my wide receiver 3 or even wide receiver 4 in Cobb for any quarterback when I can give a second round pick for, oh, I don't know, Phillip Rivers or Ben Roethlisberger or something like that. My advice to him would be, I would just target a cheaper quarterback rather than going for a guy like Matt Ryan. Now, if it comes out and Luck's going on PUP and he's out for 6 weeks and I think I have a contender, then yeah, maybe I would make a move like that to get a more stable option. But again, back to Rivers, I wouldn't be surprised if Phillip Rivers outscores Matt Ryan this year in fantasy. Not at all. So if I can get him cheaper, then that's what I would be doing.
Yeah, I understand that, I guess. I just don't like Cobb. I know them's fighting words.
Yeah, we're not friends.
He's just not very good.
Next question. We're moving on. Next question from Chris. Back to the Dolphins. What's Tannehill's value going forward?
Tough one. Yeah, I saw him dropped in one of my leagues.
I'm not surprised. The thing with Tannehill is he's just kind of one of those tweener type quarterbacks that didn't have a ton of value to begin with. He's almost in that Alex Smith, Joe Flacco territory as far as fantasy quarterbacks. And those are the guys, you might have them on your roster, but you don't ever need to start them.
You don't want to start.
Right.
Right.
But
I like them, though. See, I think he has got a chance to be good and was going the right direction. Like, this kind of broke my heart that he got hurt.
He's got that big contract. They gave him the big extension based on his improving play. I think it is fair to say, like you mentioned, that he was improving year to year. But now he's looking at a salary of $17 million plus over the next 2 or 3 years. And they're going to have a decision to make in February or March of, are we going to stick with this guy and pay him all this money, or are we going to just move on and cut our losses?
Yeah. And what if Cutler wants to come back another year and had a pretty good year, or they have a really bad year and they're in the contention for one of these first round picks, or, you know, I mean, it is a really difficult situation to project. So what's his value? I mean, that dude dropped him and I was loaded in that league and I didn't go pick him up. So, I mean,
I think there's different kinds of value in dynasty leagues. So there's what I call roster value, which basically means, is the player worth a roster spot? And then there's trade value, obviously, and draft value if you're going through a startup draft. I don't think he has any trade value.
No.
Yeah.
He has borderline roster value.
Exactly. So if I have him, I'm hoping I have an open IR spot, or I might just consider dropping him if I have less than 25 roster spots.
To piggyback off that, someone just dropped Quincy Enunwa in one of my leagues and I picked him up. I don't know if he'll last, and we've won the IR spot. I don't have anybody else hurt. So I'd rather have him on IR for now than nothing. I don't know if he'll last there. Do you think he's similar?
Yeah, I do. As far as the value standpoint, but that, right. I mean, that's a good move. If you've got that flexibility with your IR spot, some leagues lock those in. Once you place them on IR, you can't remove them. But if you've got that flexibility to move that in and out, then yeah, grab them off the waiver wire, throw them on IR and wait until, fingers crossed, one of your good players, one of your better players gets hurt. And then he'll probably hit the wire again. But yeah, I mean, Enunwa was already like my wide receiver 75, something like that. And now he's out of the top 100.
Yeah, me too.
So that's kind of how,
yeah, well said,
kind of how I feel about him. Last thing on Tannehill, give me the percentages that he is the Dolphins 2018 week 1 starter.
66.
I think it's, I think it might even be less than 50, honestly. So
yeah. Do you? I give them 2 out of 3. Cause I think they really liked them and they gave them a lot of money.
Yeah, that's true. Money is going to be the ultimate
decision
maker there. It's just tough to see how that might go. Next question from Jason. Should Willie Snead owners be concerned that Ted Ginn played all the snaps in 2 wide receiver sets in the first preseason game? Yes. No. I said earlier, we take things from preseason games like the Galladay game and the Rams Young Guys Cup, and Gerald Everett had decent performances. But we don't want to take everything to heart there. And I wouldn't be worried about that either. Again, also had yet another drop
in the end zone
in that game. Now, saying that, again, is a guy I love to grab him. I've added him off the waiver wire in a couple leagues. I've all the MFL 10 leagues or any kind of redraft leagues I've done, I've targeted him, especially that best ball format. But for I think Snead is a player that's on the rise as far as his dynasty value.
My take on all that was, not that Snead is a superstar. I mean, not like Drew Brees, who didn't play in the game at all. But they know exactly who he is. He doesn't need a lot of snaps. He's very valuable to them. He couldn't be any more different than Ted Ginn as a stylistic player. But they always have had that Devery Henderson, and that's going to be Ginn. He'll get a couple targets deep every game. Peyton knows how to use those guys. But Snead's going to be the move the chain guy. He may even have more catches than Thomas when it's all said and done. Probably not for a lot of yards, but he's much more valuable to the Saints than Ginn is. And then here's a little bit of a wild card. Did you watch any of that game? I mean, if you didn't, you know who the scatterbug Tommy Lee Lewis or something Lee Lewis.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
He had a great game. And I wonder if he's going to be Tyreek Hill light or eat into Ginn a little bit, because he seems that they like him.
Yeah, I didn't watch that game, but Lewis has done that for a couple of years. I can't remember how long he's been in the league, but he's been one of those preseason stars over the past couple of years, it seems like. And once the lights have come on, he hasn't stuck around. So I would never rule it out. He caught 10 passes in that game or something crazy.
Crazy. Yeah.
But
nice ones too.
Yeah. But no, I mean, he's not a guy I'm really looking at yet.
No, I wouldn't either, but I think the Saints might use him a little more.
Well, that would be fun in that offense for sure. Matt, our last question comes from our buddy Dwayne Brown, who we've had on the show before, one of my coworkers over at DLF. And as always with Dwayne, this is an interesting question. We expect some high-level stuff from him, and he's delivering. In the event of a future lockout that lasted an extended period of time and shifted the power back to the players, would you lose interest? So I'm assuming, would you lose interest in fantasy football, in dynasty leagues, in the NFL in general? We've seen NFL lockouts and player strikes and things like that. I don't know how much experience you had with that. I think the last really significant one was, I guess, 87, I believe, kind of before my time as a football fan. But everybody points back to the baseball strike of 94, which essentially killed baseball as the national pastime, right? As we knew it. And they lost fans through that strike that they never gained back. So an extended lockout or strike, either way it goes in these talks. What do you think? Would that affect the NFL? We've seen basically all these blemishes on the league when it comes to concussions and domestic violence issues and just so many things that might affect the numbers and the fandom in other sports, and the NFL just keeps ticking and keeps gaining steam. Would this hurt it? Would this be kind of the first move against them?
Well, they're obviously a juggernaut and the monster. I mean, they're the monopoly. They're the beast in the sports industry. But, you know, the ratings are down a little bit. A lot of people, and I don't want to get into this because it doesn't bother me as much as it apparently bothers everyone else, but the whole Kaepernick kneeling thing really has turned a lot of people off to the sport. And I can't believe you'd let that get in the way of your love of football in any way, shape, or form, but everyone to each their own. And the concussions and fewer sons out there are playing football than the generation ago or the generation before that. I think it would take a lot. I mean, extended, ugly strike or something like that. But, I mean, I could write the novel where it happens.
So what do you think fantasy leagues would look like? Would we continue with...
You mean like a scab?
Yeah, like would we continue with replacement players? I don't know. What would happen?
It's a good question, especially Dynasty. I mean, you could always find out, you know, do a redraft and you have nothing invested in these guys and you take the starting running back for the Cowboys or whatever in the first round and hope for the best. But what do you do with Dynasty leagues? You know, all your guys are tied up. I guess you just put everything on hold.
Yeah, as much as I love football and fantasy football, dynasty leagues, I don't know. I don't know if it would be worth the trouble of basically starting from scratch.
I mean, do you imagine what it would take for that to happen for, to say, Aaron Rodgers, you can never play football again, or Andrew Luck or Odell Beckham, or, you know, we're going to start over? I mean, you would lose so much.
Yeah, well, I mean, even in 87, they did – go with replacement players, right?
Was it for the whole year?
No, it wasn't for the whole year, but it was, I think it was for a few games at least.
Mark Moseley was the NFL MVP that year, by the way.
Of course. Obviously. All right. Well,
hope it doesn't come to that, because I got to make a living with this damn sport.
I know. I don't think any of us want that. But as I said, always a thought provoking question from Dwayne there. That will do it for our listener question episode tonight. And thanks again for all your questions. And thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.